This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
On Wednesday, September 18th, complaints were filed with the Indiana Attorney General's Office and the Indiana Medical Licensing Board over the Fort Wayne abortion doctor failing to report an abortion on a 13-year-old as required by state law. The age of the patient surfaced as Allen County Right to Life Executive Director Kathy Humbarger reviewed publicly available terminated pregnancy reports. The report shows that a 13-year-old had an abortion performed by Dr. Ulrich Kloffer of the Fort Wayne Women's Health Organization on February 7th. The Indiana Department of Health indicated they had received the report on July 25th, well past the deadline specified by law. According to Indiana abortion law, a physician performing an abortion on a patient less than 14 years of age must file a state-issued form within 3 days of the abortion with the State Department of Health and the Department of Child Services. Indiana law specifies that failure to report is punishable with a Class B misdemeanor. Complaints were filed with the Indiana Attorney General's Office and the Indiana Medical Licensing Board by Humbarger and Sidewalk Counselor Evelyn Witte, both of Fort Wayne. Humbarger issued the following statement. Quote, "It's heartbreaking to learn that a 13-year-old became pregnant and now must live with the pain of an abortion for the rest of her life. But it's doubly heartbreaking that Dr. Kloffer's failure to report the abortion may have allowed the girl's molester to walk free. In Indiana, sex with a person under 14 is recognized as child molesting, regardless of the male's age. No 13-year-old should have their childhood ripped out from under them like this young girl had. I call on the Attorney General to immediately investigate Dr. Kloffer's failure to report this abortion. Sadly, this is not the first time I have filed a complaint over Kloffer's failure to report an abortion on a 13-year-old within the time frame required by law, yet he still practices today. His failure to report is appalling." Close quote. You can view the terminated pregnancy report and both complaints that were filed at irtl.org.
Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of I Choose Life News and Views. This is Kathy Humbarger in the studio with you, and it has been said about our guest today that it takes courage to stand against the storm for what is right. It takes talent to reach those who do not want to hear. It takes intelligence to persuasively articulate the issues, and perhaps most importantly, it takes the fortitude of faith to dedicate such courage, talent, and intelligence to serving the most innocent. In short, it takes Ryan Baumberger, our next generation leader of the pro-life movement, and we are so privileged to have Ryan with us, not only as a guest on today's program, but also serving as the keynote speaker at the Uniting Our City for Life banquet on October 14th. I'll have more information about that later in the program. Thank you for joining us, Ryan. We're so glad that you're going to be coming to Indiana very soon, and we're just grateful that you took some time out of your busy day to join us.
Hey, I am so glad to be here. Thank you for allowing me to have a little conversation with you.
Well, we're looking forward to it. You have a very compelling reason to be pro-life. Tell us how you came to be.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I never would have thought that I would spend the majority of my life, or I should say, you know, my adult life from the past few years onward, focusing on the story of how I came to be. It's actually an incredible privilege to be able to share that story and to see how people respond so positively to it. You know, if you had to boil it down into like a bumper sticker, it would be, "I'm the 1% that's used to justify 100% of abortion." Mm. So I am that case that even pro-lifers have a difficult time embracing. My biological mother was raped, and yet, with inexplicable courage, went through 9 months of a traumatic pregnancy and gave me life. And and many women who face whatever the circumstance may be, if it's, you know, outside of the horrific act of violence that rape is, there are many women, regardless of the circumstances, that are so fixated on that pain and confusion and fear of that immediate moment that they can't see the next day. And I'm just grateful that somehow my biological mother looked a little beyond that moment. And so she gave me life and allowed me to be adopted into an amazing, not so typical American family of 15. And so
Wow. That's
basically how my life began.
Wow, that is certainly a compelling story, and you fit the definition of a hard case. And I have to tell you, Ryan, that I've met more and more people who have been willing to step up and tell their story about how they fit into that definition of the hard cases. I spoke with a woman just earlier this week who learned 1 week she was pregnant, and the next week she had a very aggressive form of breast cancer, and her courageous story certainly fits in the hard cases. I've spoken with a couple of other people in the last couple of months who were conceived by rape. I've talked with people who have been raped. As a matter of fact, we're working with a little girl, actually, who just turned 14, and she was sexually molested when she was 13, conceived and gave birth to her baby, and with the assistance of her family, she's raising that child as well. So I think the more we look in the faces of those that we have so glibly called the hard cases, the harder it is for us to dismiss you as throwaway people that can be forgotten about as we fight the pro-life fight. So I appreciate you sharing your story and all the others that are stepping forward too.
And I love sharing that story because there's something so potent about, you know, these tangible examples, people who have stories similar to mine, who were able to stand before people and be able to break that stranglehold, if you will, of rhetoric, because it's so much easier to dismiss stories like mine and human beings like me who have the tragic beginnings when it's just words. But when it's a person in front of you sharing that story, you know, I actually like to think of myself and others like me, you know, like Rebecca Kiesling and Pam Stenzel and many others who are born as a result of rape as the heart cases, H-E-A-R-T,
exactly.
Because it really takes these personal examples to be able to break past a lot of the mainstream media clutter and all of the bitter rhetoric, because, you know, you can share all the statistics you want, but sometimes you just need to hear that real life story, and that's what connects with people's hearts. And I love it because I travel across the country speaking to thousands and thousands of people, and I feel blessed that God has given me that opportunity. But I meet so many rape survivors who have chosen abortion, but many of whom do not choose abortion.
Right.
And what I think is such a shame, the mainstream media does not talk about these women's stories. And so I'm not here to tell any individual what they should do, but what I am here and what I hope is my life represents the other side of the story.
Exactly. Have you had the opportunity to meet your biological mother? Do you know any of the circumstances behind her choice to not choose an abortion and how you came to be placed in your most unusual family of 15?
You know, I don't know many of the details. It's kind of disappointing is at one point in my life, after I got my master's degree, which was important to me, I wanted to achieve a certain level of success, if you will, before I pursued finding my biological mother. And I wanted to just thank her. That's really all I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so after grad school, I did petitioned the judge to open my records, because in my case, they're sealed.
Sure.
And they were open, and for a period of 9 months, which was extended longer than the normal period, they searched for my biological mother. And so they don't know whether they actually contacted her or not, but there was no response.
Mm.
So they may or may not have contacted her. So at this point, I've never met my biological mother. But what I wanted to do, and not like the talk show myths that are out there, like all of a sudden, you know, I'm incomplete if I don't have a relationship with my biological mother. All I wanted to do was to thank her. I wrote the song called Meant to Be. And so what I sent to the court were two CDs with the song on it, you know, basically saying, thank you. I am so grateful you allowed me to live. You allowed me to love and be loved. You know, there's some of the lyrics of the song. And that's really all I wanted. I wanted her to know how incredibly grateful I was. Mm-hmm. But at this point, there's been no connection, but I still believe sometime in my life I will be able to connect with her, or she will somehow find me, and I would love just to be able to hug the mess out of her and just thank her and, you know, to show her my four children and to be able to talk about how her singular decision continues to have reverberations that she never, ever could have known back in 1971 when I was born.
But you know, Ryan, you may have thanked her, because as you talk to more and more people and you're on the secular media, who knows but that the Lord would draw her to the TV or to the radio or to the internet at just the right time. And
right.
She may realize that that's you. So I'm going to pray that she will hear your thank you in some way, shape, or form before the Lord takes her home. So maybe this will be the program, and that would just be delightful. But I'm just going to trust God that you will have the opportunity, even though you may not know it, for her to hear your thank you.
Yeah, I would love that opportunity. And we never know. God is a God of unending surprises.
Oh,
so
isn't that the truth?
You never know what he's got right around the corner.
Exactly. Well, the theme for our banquet this year is celebrate adoption. And I know that you celebrate yours. If you had to pick out one or two special blessings from your family, your adoptive family, what would you share with our listeners has been special to you?
Being alive would be the first one. That's pretty much
what we're
celebrating.
That's pretty much, yeah, right.
Yes. Being loved like crazy. Being loved in a family that honestly I think represents God's heart. You know, we are a racially and ethnically diverse family. We're white, we're black, we're black and white, we're Native American, Vietnamese. You know, it's just a beautiful representation, I think, of God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I celebrate being loved in a diverse family and by parents who understood that their calling was to help unleash purpose. So, you know, in those few things, I celebrate adoption because it unleashed my purpose. It unleashed the purpose in my nine other siblings who are also adopted,
mm-hmm.
and who were also written off as unwanted and
wow.
who wouldn't amount to anything. So there's a lot to celebrate.
Well, I too celebrate adoption. I'm the adoptive mother of two little girls. Well, they're not so little anymore. They're 30 and 32. But my heroes, whenever I consider adoption, are the birth mothers who release these children into a situation that's such a selfless act. And that's one of the things that we're going to be emphasizing at the banquet, is that these women are indeed heroes, and
yes.
your mother doubly so.
And I think the same thing of, you know, my youngest son's birth mom, too, because my wife Bethany, and I are adoptive parents. We have four, and two of our children are adopted, and our youngest one, our latest little guy, Justice, I can't imagine life without him.
Yeah.
I can't imagine life without
For sure.
any of the four, but the two in particular who are adopted. There's just something about that. There's just something about looking at the birth mom's circumstances
mm-hmm.
and wanting to do more to come alongside
exactly.
those women and celebrate that courage.
Exactly. Well, this is Kathy Humbarger in the studio with you today, and our very special guest is Ryan Baumberger. Ryan has been described as the next generation leader of the pro-life movement, and I think that you will draw that same conclusion in hearing him speak today to us via radio, but also to attend our banquet that is October 14th. It's going to be at the Grand Wayne Center. This is our 16th annual Banquet for Life. We're going to have a social hour at 5:30 and dinner at 6:30. Please call the Allen County Right to Life office, 260-471-1849, 260-471-1849, or you can visit our website at ichooselife.org, ichooselife.org, and make your reservations. It's going to be a great evening. Honorary hosts are Mr. and Mrs. Don Ellerding, who are adoptive parents themselves, and we're going to be giving the Daniel Award for Excellence in the public policy arena to fight for the unborn to our 3rd District Congressman Marlon Stutzman. It's going to be a great evening again, October 14th at the Grand Wayne Center in Fort Wayne. Let's turn a corner here for a minute, if we could, Ryan. I think that we would both agree that the most pressing civil rights issue of our day is abortion. However, I think we'd also agree that many African Americans would be offended by that statement. Help us understand how we can break through that wall of resistance and let those of the African American community know that we want to fight for them as well and that abortion does adversely affect them.
Well, I think it should probably be known, since this is radio and it's not a visual medium, people should understand I'm as black as Obama, which means I'm half white, half black. So that's kind of important to understand because I was labeled as black and unwanted. And when you talk about civil rights and you talk about the dehumanization of black people in this country since we were first brought over from Africa. And by the way, I don't consider myself African-American. I'm just happy to be American.
Exactly.
But this is the civil rights issue of our day. And actually, because of all the travels across the United States, I meet plenty of other black Americans, particularly Christians, who do believe that abortion is the most pressing civil rights issue of our day. But if you listen to mainstream media and a ton of so-called black leadership, you hear that being denounced. But this is how I would address it. You know, if slavery was oppressive because black individuals like me had no right to life, how is that any different than any other group of human beings being oppressed by the same warped mentality?
Exactly.
You had the Dred Scott decision, which was ruled 7-2 by the Supreme Court back in 1857, that said black folk were not human. They couldn't, you know, they could be sold, they could be traded, or they could be killed because they were property that belonged to someone else. Roe v. Wade made the exact same conclusion in the exact same declaration. And the vote, which was also 7-2, just like the Dred Scott decision, simply proved that seven supremely wrong justices could play God and define humanity. And so here you have, you know, the nation's leading so-called civil rights groups like the NAACP, the National Urban League, you've got the Congressional Black Caucus, that support the nation's largest abortion chain, Planned Parenthood, and have abdicated their role in fighting for the most disenfranchised and the most defenseless among us. In fact, you know, during the Trayvon Martin tragedy, the very racially exploited tragedy of Trayvon Martin, the NAACP declared that the most fundamental right, you know, is the right to life. But somehow that does not translate
into
the right to life of black babies who are aborted at six times the rate of those in the majority population.
That's just amazing how that conflicted thinking can go on. And I appreciate you and others like you who are willing to step forward and say, this thinking isn't rational, and we need to look at this realistically, look at the facts, and make the connection here. You mentioned the NAACP and some of the other leading African-American organizations, and you wrote a recent opinion piece about the NAACP, and I'm going to quote a line from what you wrote. It's easier to ignore an epidemic if you pretend it doesn't exist. Why do you suppose organizations like the NAACP that fight so hard for the rights of African Americans, and they've made some significant gains, no doubt about it, but they choose to ignore that abortion exists or that it impacts them or that these little babies have civil rights? I don't understand how that can be. Do you have any insight into their thinking?
Yeah, I mean, it takes an understanding of the history and the evolution of the NAACP. I mean, they are the nation's oldest civil rights organization, and I, as a child, I revered the work that they did. Obviously, they were instrumentally involved in the Brown v. Board of Education decision, and they've had tremendous number of achievements throughout the 20th century. But this is an example of civil rights gone wrong, and this is what happens when politics trump principle. And you see it in all of these major black organizations, liberal black organizations. I have to actually separate that because you've got the NAACP, the Congressional Black Caucus, National Urban League, the National Council of Negro Women. I mean, the list goes on and on. And how is it that somehow the fundamental right to life does not apply to the most vulnerable? You know, they want to talk about economic justice. They want to talk about environmental justice. They want to talk about, you know, voting justice. Well, the ultimate act of voter suppression is killing lives before they become voters.
Exactly.
And you're talking, you know, in the black community alone, 15 to 18 million who have been aborted since Roe. And yet these organizations, these so-called civil rights organizations, side with the destructive, eugenic, racist organization birthed in, you know, eugenics, Planned Parenthood.
Right.
And it makes no sense unless you look at it as political allegiance over principle.
Well, that certainly does put a filter over the thinking. And I know that there is a growing number, though, of folks just like you who are speaking out and beginning to be heard. And I just see more and more Americans like you who happen to have dark skin who are speaking out and being heard, because it seems that you have more impact with the African-American community than somebody with white skin like me, because too often people think, oh, here comes this white woman thinking she's got the answer for us. So I appreciate the growing number of you who are willing to speak out regardless of being ostracized and maybe even ridiculed by people of your own race.
Well, here's the irony, though, too, by the way, Kathy, is that the NAACP was founded mostly by white people. You wouldn't know that. It was mostly by white people. It was a multiracial endeavor. And what it's become is this highly politicized, extremely liberal, out-of-touch organization that is so racially fixated that it can't get outside of itself to see the true issues facing our nation, and in particular the black community. So, you know, I'm encouraged because there are black conservatives, brown conservatives who look at these organizations as failed organizations. Mm-hmm. Their liberal policies have failed urban America, and they're calling them out.
And it's not only the abortion issue that they're being called out on. So, you know, as we talked before we started taping, oftentimes steps are slow and incremental, but eventually God gets us where he wants us to be, so we're just going to stay in the fight as long as it takes. You not only talk the talk, but you walk the walk. You founded the Radiance Foundation, Ryan. Tell our listeners a little bit about what the mission is of the foundation.
Sure. You know, my wife, Bethany, and I are so passionate about what we do through the Radiance Foundation, and people can find out more at theradiancefoundation.org. But the organization itself was named after our daughter. My wife was a single mom for a year's time. And so we know and identify with young women and men who find themselves just in fear and confusion. And so what we want to, you know, beyond the life issue, which is, of course, foundational, we want people to understand that hope transforms everything and that life can be transformed. Our daughter, Radiance, transformed my wife's life. Mm. She transformed my life. And so we want to really direct people to just the simple fact that hope can transform anything. So we do it through creative ad campaigns, through powerful multimedia live presentations, and compassionate community outreach. We address a myriad of social issues in the context of God-given purpose. And, you know, call us crazy, but we we have this wild idea that every human life has irreplaceable intrinsic value that, thank God, is not defined by man, it's not defined by a woman, it's not defined by a governmental institution, you know, it was defined by the creator of the universe. And so through all of our efforts, our heart is really to help people understand and embrace their own intrinsic value. And it's amazing how you can move people from a place of unawareness to beautiful, positive action. And that's what we strive to do through the Radiance Foundation.
Well, I know one of the pieces of your organization is the billboard campaign, and you have some absolutely fantastic billboards. I would encourage our listeners to visit your website to take a look at those. But you've had some pretty hard pushback from those billboards, as I understand.
Yes, and, you know, it doesn't matter what the pro-life messaging is. Abortion activists will denounce it. I mean, we've been denounced by the ACLU. We've been denounced by, of course, Planned Parenthood, by the NAACP. But it only goes to show us that we're doing the right
exactly.
thing. You know, our TooManyAborted.com billboard initiative, we launched initially back in 2010, and over the following few years, we have put over 500 billboards in major cities across the country. And most of the feedback from the public has been incredibly positive, especially from even post-abortive women. And so we've placed these billboards, we've been denounced, and we've been derided, and I've been called a white, racist, southern bigot, which is interesting because, one, okay, I am half white, but not that being white is synonymous with being racist, nor that being southern is synonymous with being racist. Mm-hmm. But the mainstream media gets it wrong all the time. I'm from the North, you know, and I obviously I have brown skin, but I don't fit their narrative.
Right.
I don't fit their narrative at all. In fact, there's a perfect example where the NPR was doing a story on the initial campaign, and they interviewed me for about 45 minutes offline. When I went to go see the story, the three and a half minute story on NPR, they don't mention me. They don't mention the Radiance Foundation. They don't. I'm not in there at all. They could not figure out a way to demonize someone with a story like mine, an adoptee, an adoptive father who created this ad campaign. But you know what? The beautiful thing is people are responding. Lives, we get emails about people choosing not to abort, women choosing not to abort. You know, it makes all the crazy demonization from mainstream media and abortion activists worthwhile, because when you know you've played a role in human triumph.
Exactly.
Saving a life, you know, I don't care. I'll pull all-nighters. I'll get, you know, trashed by mainstream media outlets. I don't care. Because in the end, I know we're doing what we're called to do, and that is to try to save beautiful possibility.
Well, give us your website one more time, Ryan, because there's an absolute wealth of information there. And I, after spending a few minutes on your website, came away just tremendously encouraged, and that's what we need in the pro-life movement, encouragement. So give your website one more time, and then we'll give the details about the banquet and try to get as many folks in the seats as we can when you come to Indiana.
I can't wait to come to Indiana. Until then, people can check out the work that we do at theradiancefoundation.org. You can figure out how we do what we do and look at the videos, everything we create in-house, so it's all original. We love to educate. At the same time, we love to love on people. So check it out, theradiancefoundation.org.
Well, we're looking forward to being inspired and encouraged and challenged by you, Ryan, at the Uniting Our City for Life banquet on October 14th. It's going to be at the Grand Wayne Center in downtown Fort Wayne. Tickets are available, but seating is limited. Please contact the Allen County Right to Life office at 260-471-1849. 260-471-1849, or visit our website at ichooselife.org. Until the 14th, Ryan will wish you Godspeed for whatever he has planned for you between now and then, and you will find a room full of warm, active, encouraging pro-lifers to greet you when you step on stage.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.